All right, let's go ahead and get started. We have our agenda here. There. Nicholas, would you mind scribing today? Excuse me.
I normally wouldn't, but I'm in a cramped space here. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Marcus,
I'm at.
could you scribe today?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. All right, on the agenda today, we have a review of the timeline and priorities for finishing up these JSON-LD documents. We have issue 43, use of IRIs and queries as context keys. Issue 44, allow frames to say the predicate always points to a set. And issue 49, relative IRIs may clash with terms. Are there any updates or changes to the agenda? Anything else that we should discuss on the call today?
No.
All right, let's go ahead and get started then. And of course, Marcus, we'll scribe for you when you talk. I posted a plan to finish the documents, timeline, and priorities email to the mailing list last week at some point. Marcus, I think you're the one that had the most number of comments on it, the most amount of feedback. So we should definitely go over that feedback on the call today. In general, what we're proposing to do is to try and finish off these documents by May at some point, and then start an actual working group at the World Wide Web Consortium to take these documents to REC. I believe, Marcus, one of your concerns was that the documents are a little too tightly coupled right now, and you feel that we should try and make it such that the syntax spec could go to REC without the API and normalization stuff. Was there other concerns that you had as well?
Well, that's one point of it. The other thing is that a lot of people probably just treat the syntax spec without even looking at the API spec, and there isn't enough information in the syntax spec to understand how all these things work, because a lot of that knowledge is actually in the API spec. So even if we don't do it for the sake of being able to kind of create a recommendation of the syntax spec before the API spec is ready, I think we should still try to do it to put all the knowledge in the syntax document, because I expect that that's the document that most people actually will read.
All right, so I agree with you in principle. I'm wondering, I'm wondering what we need to move over from the API spec. I would expect it's like the expansion algorithm. And is that it? Like, it is how we process the context and the expansion algorithm the only things that we need to move over?
Well, I think there are a couple of details which are just described in the API spec. And we have to take those details over to the syntax spec as well. So sometimes you just understand how, for example, IRI expansion or where REI expansion works if you read the whole the whole API spec or the algorithms of the API spec. But I think that should be in the syntax spec.
Okay. I guess the other concern I have is I'm wondering if I mean, we can explain the syntax, certainly, and we can say what values are and are not allowed in the syntax. And I'm wondering if we need to specify what the model is, like if that's how we end up saying how the syntax works.
What do you mean by model?
Meaning, you know, what is the end representation of it? Like we let's say that we express how to expand IRIs. And how the context is used to expand those IRIs. I guess my question is that all we need in the syntax specification, or do we need something else to meet some W3C rule for syntaxes for languages?
I don't know about W3C, but at least from a reader's perspective, I think that would be enough. And for example, we don't have to describe the whole algorithm to do compaction. It's just we just have to describe the output of the compaction or the output of the expansion, because we have that MIME type parameter in there, but we never talk about expansion or compaction, for example.
Right. Okay. So you believe that both the compaction and expansion algorithms need to be moved into the syntax specification?
No, not the algorithms. Just describe what a JSON-OD, a compacted document, looks like following, and an expanded document has all the RIs expanded and the context is removed. So that's kind of the level of detail I would like to see in the syntax spec, but not really the algorithms.
Yeah, I don't know if that's kosher from a W3C standpoint. Because when you talk about document conformance, we'd have to talk about document. That's probably how we'd have to express this, is in document conformance, and we would have to explain exactly what a conforming JSON-LD document is, both in expanded form and compacted form, I believe. And in order to do that, we have to specify what the algorithm is to get to a compacted form or to an expanded form. Or we could specify a looser definition like what you just said. I don't know if that's going to be good enough. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yes. I haven't really read the XML canonicalization document, but it sounds like we could look at that and see if there is some correspondence to how canonicalization is approached in XML.
That's a good suggestion. So you're saying just look at some other specs and see how they do it, like see how the HTML spec specifies. The HTML5 spec specifies algorithms, so that's probably not a good example of it. In fact, the HTML5 spec in bleeding detail explains the algorithms of how you get Dom, it's just kind of, you know, I don't know, it's there's a lot of detail in there. So that's probably not what we want to do. We want to focus on something like, I mean, the JSON is, they have a syntax spec, but there's also an API associated with it, right? There's JSON.parse, and they define that algorithm in the spec, I thought.
Do they?
In the JavaScript. Done after the fact.
Because, yeah, JSON itself is algorithm free. So that might be something we should think about, because the compact and expanded forms could probably, as Marcus says, be described in an algorithm free way, sort of like, because they are states more than, there are many different methods to get to those states, and we could set up criteria for, say, the expanded form uses no QRIs and always uses the built-in keywords and so on. So at least the expanded form is probably possible to describe in a way similar to canonical XML or something like that, which is a set of criteria.
Right. Okay. So then I guess the general approach would be to try and specify this in an algorithm-free way. Try and specify how you do expansion or compaction. Well, maybe the idea isn't in an algorithm-free way, but just describe. We should be able to say I mean, the algorithm basically takes the what's in the context and runs through something to expand an IRI. So I think I don't think that putting an algorithm in the spec is necessarily that bad of a thing. No,
we don't have to avoid it, but it just incidentally happens to be described as an algorithm.
Right.
More or less. Okay. I think that canonicalization does something similar, although I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. Well, we should probably look at the language there and see what exactly they do. But I think the underlying principle, I think, is good, right, Marcus, which is basically we want to try and decouple the syntax spec from the API spec completely so that it can proceed to rec on a different timeline than the API spec, not only because it decouples it for the W3C process, but because it would be a good design spec-wise to decouple it from the API. Okay. So let's see. Let me go ahead and put a proposal in here. Decouple the JSON LD syntax specification from the JSON LD API specification. All right, good. All right, so we'll go ahead and do that. Marcus, was there anything else with the timeline that you were concerned about?
I think, yeah, the only thing I said was that I'm not so sure if we can meet the API deadline, the one you put up.
Yeah, it's aggressive.
But that's a different story.
Yeah, the downside, there's no negative consequence for us not meeting these deadlines. We just need to put something down and to kind of show people what we're shooting for. I think, the JSON-LD API is, as far as I think our company is concerned, we're fairly happy with it. There's some minor nits that need to be cleaned up here and there, but other than that, I think it's mostly a matter of other people implementing the API and telling the community what they think about it. I think we have the advantage that we've been kind of working with this for the last 2 years, and we feel fairly confident that the API addresses many of the use cases that we've come across when we have to work with the data. But again, other people don't have that benefit, and so I think we need to get some other implementers implementing the API spec to see what they think. Okay, anything else on this agenda item before we move on to the next one? IRIs and queries as context keys?
No, at least I can't remember anything.
Okay. All right, next up is issue 43. Let me grab the IRI for that, URL for that. It's there.
Maybe just quickly, because, sorry, just Ivan replied on that part. So what were you thinking of, like piggyback it on a different working group or create a new working group or?
It's a big unanswered question right now. We don't know. We might want to work with the RDF working group to do that. But there may not be the people that we need in the RDF working group to work on that. So basically, the people that are working on JSON-LD right now should probably be the people that end up in the working group, coupled with a number of people from RDF working group and maybe a couple other people within W3C. But we may end up creating a completely new working group for this work. The RDF working group still has this on their charter, but we don't know if they're going to actually pick up the work or just say, hey, another working group should take care of this. So that's the big unknown. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
I don't remember who it was, but wasn't it one of the editors of the RDF JSON work which they started on, who sort of pulled the emergency stop because he found that JSON-LD was probably more interesting?
Sorry, I didn't follow that, Nicholas.
But they had started on standardizing RDF/JSON, and then they sort of interjected and said that JSON-LD looks more promising for the use cases they imagined.
Yeah, that was actually a big... I mean, it was a big discussion, and I was trying to push them to just stop that work. We don't know where the work's going to end up, but there are really two options that seem reasonable right now. One of them is that there will be a new JSON-LD working group created at W3C. The other option is the RDF working group will pick up the work and do that.
Yeah.
So those are the only two options that I know of right now. Okay. Anything else before we move on?
No, that's it.
Okay. Issue 43, I'm trying to think of what this issue is using IRIs and queries as context keys. So on the left-hand side in the context specification, we should be able to use both full IRIs and queries. I forget what we did not resolve on this. I thought that we resolved almost everything, but does anyone else remember what the remaining bit we need to resolve on this is?
Yeah, the thing was we ran into a couple of problems because for 1 week we had problems to define how to merge different definitions because different definitions could end up to the same ERI.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have different types or different IDs for the same end URI, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that was basically the issue. And I think we had some more discussions, mainly Greg and me. And one possible solution would be to use the left-hand side always as it is. So, for example, if you have a prefix term on the left-hand side or a full IRI, you just use that, you just use the right-hand side if in the JSON-LD document itself there is the same, the property is exactly the same as the key in the context definition. That would be one solution which I think addresses all the problems.
Hold on, I'm scribing for you. From what I understand, the main issue was that if you specify two different IDs, like you specify FOF to one ID and then FOF colon name to something that's not FOF colon name, but let's say RDFS label or something, there would be a conflict there, and you're saying that in order to resolve that conflict, we would just end up using what is in FOF colon name, the RDFS label one, instead of expanding via FOF. So the longest term match, it's a greedy match algorithm. Is that right?
I don't know if you can just say the longest. I would say the most specific one, or the if it equals, yeah, then the equality, or otherwise, yeah, the longest, yeah.
Ah, okay.
So either a term or a term prefix or a IRI.
Okay, so the first check is for equality, and then it breaks it down into the query, that it tries to expand.
Yeah.
That, I think, works. And then ID could override. What if they don't specify ID at all?
Well, that's the same as having a term without specifying an ID.
but it wouldn't. But for example, it wouldn't.
You mean like you have a prefix and a term, and you don't specify the ID in there?
Yeah. So let's say they do this. I'll type something out in IRC fof colon name. They do.
So for example, you have fof name, but you don't specify the ID in there, right?
Yeah. So they do something like that.
Yeah, I think then we would fall back on the simply expand that if it's possible to expand it.
Okay. Okay. I think that works. It makes it a little more, it makes the algorithm a little more complicated, but I don't think it's that terrible. Okay, so the proposal is to make, let's see, when expanding JSON LD keys outside of the context, perform a direct comparison first, then run the query expansion algorithm on the direct comparison on the context keys first, then run the query expansion algorithm on the okay, so in expanding JSON LD keys outside of the context, perform direct comparison on the context keys first, and then run the query expansion using the context keys. And then we'll have a second proposal for if an ID is not specified in a query like fof name, then you fall back and do query expansion to figure out what fof name actually is. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I gotta work with this a bit, but I think I'm following, and it looks good.
Okay. All right. So that is resolved, and then the next one is if a query in the context does not specify an ID, assume that the queries ID expands to whatever I'm having a hard time phrasing this. If a query in the context does not specify an ID, generate the ID by expanding the term using the context.
Is it allowed to have a query in the context with an ID?
Yes, it is now.
As a key.
Oh, as a key? You can have a... Can you type out what you mean?
Yeah, like... Kind of like that.
Yep, and that's now based on what we're talking now, that's allowed, and it would basically expand. If you use FOF name somewhere in the document, it would expand that ID, and it would not use FOF the FOF term. And if someone did not specify that ID, that's the proposal we're talking about now. If someone did not specify that ID, it would use whatever the FOF term is, expand that and tack on name to the end of it.
Okay. I don't see why we should allow this form. I don't see any... I only see confusion coming from that.
Well, go ahead, Marcus.
I think it's not whether we allow it, it's more that we don't disallow it, because if you do it that way, it's simply just another term, and it's the same processing algorithm. It's just a term that happens to have a colon in it.
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying, Nicholas. But I don't know why we should disallow it. I think most people are just not going to specify ID, and that's fine. But if let's say people do specify ID in the spec, we'd either have to say ID is ignored completely, or we'd have to kick out an error. So
yeah, I guess if you do that, you either have very special needs or know what you're... Well, you should only do that if you know what you're doing. We might want to add some kind of warning about it and say that this will be very hard to read.
Right.
Because of the... Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, we should basically say don't do this and instead just specify the type, the coercion rule, and just leave it as that. Okay. Does that address your concern, Nicholas?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so the proposal is if a query in the context does not specify an ID, generate the ID by expanding the term using the context and adding the part to the right of the... or to the right-hand side of the colon to the end of the expanded value. Basically, do query expansion on that. Oh, you know what? This might be a bad proposal. We may just want to say if a query in the context does not specify an ID, generate the ID using query expansion. I don't even know if we should say generate the ID. We may want to say the ID is what would be generated per the normal query expansion rules for FOF name.
It just falls back on the current algorithm, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so proposal, if a query in the context does not specify an ID, the expansion algorithm for the query falls back. Expansion algorithm for the query falls back on regular query expansion. Query in the context does not specify an ID. Expansion algorithm for the query. Even that's a little problematic. If a query in the context does not specify an ID, the ID is assumed to be the same If a query in the context does not specify an ID, the ID is assumed to be the same as what would be generated by expanding the term and adding the part to the right-hand side of the colon, the value. Unless someone else can come up with a better phrasing, that's the closest I can think.
I was thinking if a query has a key in the context does not, but isn't bound to an ID, maybe.
Bound to an ID, okay.
The ID is determined by expanding the key as a query.
That. I like that.
Yes.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Thanks.
Waiting for me to vote.
Yes.
Because I have no idea.
Okay. So you can do a plus zero.
Okay.
Or whatever. All right. Okay. I think that resolves all of the issues that we had with issue 43. Is that correct? Use of IRIs and queries as context keys. I can't think of a failure case that we didn't discuss.
Do we have a test suite for all this stuff?
I mean, these are all new-ish features that we're adding, so...
Right, I mean, it seems like... It seems like before we resolve these things, we need to have a test, make as many test cases as we can that cover all these issues.
It usually happens in the opposite way, because you end up churning quite a bit on the syntax spec. You end up churning on the spec, and then everyone kind of agrees to the way that it should be done, and then you write a test to make sure that it actually works. I can't think of a reason why it wouldn't work right now. I mean, so I don't think that we really need to go and create test cases before we resolve to change the language in the spec. I mean, if we make a mistake here, we can always go back and fix it, but I don't think we're making a mistake here. Make sense?
Yeah, sure.
The only remaining issue here is maybe how type coercion should work. Because you could perhaps have two definitions and you don't know which to choose.
Yeah, you'd always choose the expansion or the matching algorithm. It always checks the quality first, so you would always use the type in the query before you'd use the one where you'd have to expand, right?
But what
actually,
if, for example,
always, go ahead, sorry.
If you have, for example, in the context, you have a term which is coerced to a certain type and a prefix suffix coerced to a certain type, but in the JSON-LD document you use an IRI. So you have, for that IRI, two different type coercions.
I would expect that you would end up using, you would check the left-hand side for a direct match, and it would not match FOF colon name, right? So you would fall back to FOF, per the current algorithm, which doesn't...
But on the left-hand side, in the document itself, there is an absolute IRI. So that's already the expanded version of it.
Right. I think that you would have to... I mean, the problem is that you would probably have to specify the full IRI in the context to treat that in a special way. Otherwise, you would end up using whatever the term is, right? Yeah, I mean, you would just skip the type version. I mean, the other approach that we could take for this is you use the IRI that has the most amount of data on it. So, for example, if you have a term like FOF and it only specifies like the ID, and then you have FOF colon name, which specifies the ID and the type and other stuff, you end up using the one that specifies the most amount of information. But that seems, then we'd have to define what the most amount of information means.
I think for type version. Sorry, Niklas.
No, go ahead.
I think for type coercion it's fine if we just use the... No, that's not fine. No.
I think that first that kind of data would be immensely complex. Someone probably did something very strange when they generated such data. And we should do something, a very simple matching rule, saying that look up the king lexically first, and if it matches and there is no type coercion, then it's just a string. If it doesn't match, look up the lexical QRI, and use whatever rule there is there. So even if you don't have type coercion, you would just fall through. But the other way would be if the... well, it depends on the value of the term.
I think if we do just... if we just check for equality for type coercion, that would be fine and would handle all cases I can think of currently.
Yeah. And in fact, I don't think that we... Yeah, I mean, I agree. We, you know, an IRI shouldn't be... I mean, you don't have to do query expansion on it, right? And as Marcus said, the only thing that we should be checking for is a direct equality comparison. And if that URL isn't in the context, then it's got no type information in it. Even if there's something like FOF colon name, let's say FOF colon age, let's say there's age and then FOF colon age, and both of them point to different IRIs and both of them have different types. If someone uses a full IRI down in their data, you would look into the context and not find a direct match for that, and therefore there would be no type coercion rule for that full IRI. They would have to specify the full IRI in the context if they wanted type coercion to apply to it.
Yes. I think that's a good approach.
Okay.
Maybe if they'd find anything for IRI, make it simple. I mean, this is fairly edge case stuff anyway, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's for generated contexts mainly. I mean, both Greg and Ivan primarily wanted this because they wanted to coerce data on the fly while generating a small context for serializing a graph.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the primary use case, I think.
Okay, so let's see, type coercion requires, if a JSON LD document uses a full IRI for the left hand key in the data, the any type coercion rule that would apply to that key must use the full RI in the context.
Wouldn't it be simpler to say type coercion just checks for equality in the context?
Yeah, I think so. Type coercion only checks for the type coercion algorithm only checks for equality in the context when attempting to find the type coercion rule. Like that?
Yes.
That's for interpreting JSON. Correct. This doesn't affect any kind of how to create JSON-LD from an RDF graph. No, it can't. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Any other item on issue 43?
No, I think that should everything now.
Okay. All right. Next up is 44, allowing frames to say that a predicate always points to a set. Find the URL for that. So this one basically says that the issue was that the person that reported this wanted to be able to say that a telephone number should always be an array of items, right? It should be a set. And the reason that he wanted that was because he wanted the data to be structured in a very particular way, in a very specific way. The downside is that this is exactly what we have framing for. So putting this feature in there right now would be a conflict with the way that we do framing. And the other issue was that So one of them is that there's a conflict with framing. We don't think that, or at least I spoke with Dave Longley about this the other week, and he doesn't think that we should do this yet. We may want to do it in the future. And so in order to make sure that that happens, what we may want to do is introduce a new keyword, like structure or container, and then specify a list. I think this is, Nicholas, you recommended that we do this in the bug somewhere. But you also said that you wanted to see this feature in there.
Yes. I think that it began, well, I've brought it up a couple of times, and this mail I linked to just was by, was it David I. Lem?
Yeah, that's Lane. He's on the call.
Lane, yeah. And let's see. This for simplify framing. The proposal speaks about framing. My use case is regardless of framing, but I think that the proposal was put forward because it might be needed to simplify framing as well. Well.
Oh yeah, you're right. I didn't realize that this this applied directly to framing. So yeah, maybe we do want a container. container set and the container list.
I would be very happy because although I definitely know why framing is useful in many cases, in my particular application, I don't need framing because I create a very framed set of data for a specific resource, which is the view of the resource.
Mm-hmm.
Always know the root, the start node.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, I walk down and expand everything. This is also why I've been talking about using Rev, because I also, in this specific set of data, have certain items which are relevant to this resource. But that's another topic. Anyway, when I do this walking, I would have tremendous use of this way. Actually, I already use this in my particular implementation because I need to be able to say that these properties will always be lists because the users of that data up over it and they had a hard...
Do you mean lists or do you mean sets?
Well, in the RDF sense, sets, but in the JSON... in the JSON set, arrays. So it should be an array, even if there is only one item.
But why do you need a term to say that if that's how you're structuring your data? Isn't that an API? Isn't
because
that like an application agreement? Yeah, isn't that an agreement that you specify at your web service web API level?
Well, a lot of the agreement is the JSON-LD context. I mean, there I say which things are dates and so on and so forth. So from that structure, I need to specify that. And this was a very good mechanism because then I could say that from my end it's much easier because the context is the sole thing which funnels the triples into JSON. I had to specify this offhand in some way if I didn't use this mechanism.
Okay.
And it became very verbose when I looked at using framing for it because I have, it's at some cases quite very complex data. It's all kinds of different documents with properties. It's a model of a very old legal information model,
mm-hmm.
which is very wild.
Okay, so your proposal for the spec would be, so there are two main proposals right now that come out of this issue. One of them is to add let's just call it a container.
Yeah.
And then that would be associated with, you know, terms in the context. And the container thing would specify, for now, just at list, right? The addition that you would like to see is that we add a new keyword called at set that would specify that if at set is specified, then you can treat the data in the document as a JSON list, right? It will always be a JSON list. And basically,
yeah.
that would be document conformance criteria that would say that if you use set, if you'd say container set in your context, then the data must be expressed as a set in the JSON-LD document. So it's more of a document conformance criteria than anything else.
Yeah.
Okay. I would definitely support, I certainly support the first one. The second one, I think we may want to reserve set and specify why we've reserved it, but not necessarily put it in the spec right now until we get more people kind of saying that it's something useful. The only reason I have an issue with this is it's a fairly strange document conformance thing, right? I mean, it's not something that's going to break. I'm trying to figure out how if it would break implementations or if people would end up ignoring it and there wouldn't be any kind of danger with ignoring it. So for example, if something says structure set, and then the people don't use a set down in the JSON-LD document, one way we could enforce that is to have a JSON-LD document validator that would catch that error. The other, and that's really it, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, I see. I see what you mean.
So I'm struggling to see how we, because people could specify and just ignore it, and then all of a sudden we've got a feature in the spec that doesn't really impact people in many cases.
And I'm not sure if this is better in this case, but if you look at the currently suggested form of JSON for the microdata RDF vocabulary registry, they have the key multiple values, which corresponds to our suggested container. And the keywords they have there is either list, which means the thing that our keyword means, and unordered.
Yeah, I see.
I don't know if that's better in any way, but it's interesting to see the correspondence.
Yeah.
But that is doing something different, right?
Not really. It says that if there are multiple values, this is how you should interpret them.
Yeah, but that's how we have at least true, or if that's not true, then it's unordered. But it doesn't say if it's an array or not.
No, absolutely. So this is, but I just, there is a slight correspondence in choice of keywords, if nothing else.
Okay, so let's go ahead and, go ahead, Nicholas.
I was just thinking if there should be some kind of validator aspect of this, which from my, I don't have a need for it, but I can see why it might be interesting to investigate. If that would be interesting, there could also be a value, something like container with a value, I don't know, object perhaps, to say that there should only be one value. There should never be a list here. But that's if you want validation, or for that matter, if you want to drop multiple values, if there happen to be any, and just randomly pick one.
Okay, so something like that. Values. Yes, list. Okay, so the proposal is add the container keyword to JSON-LD and allow its value to be list. Specify that values must be interpreted as an RDF list.
What's the point of doing that?
The point of doing that is we're removing the at list colon true thing and just specifying a general container keyword, because in the future we may want to add at set to it, and because people, at least my reading is that people seem to like at container better than at list colon true to specify that something's a list. So you're basically specifying what the container is. It's either a list or a set, and we're going to reserve sets, and we may end up putting that in the spec for JSON-LD 1.1 or later version of JSON-LD, but we're not adding it right now. That makes sense?
If we, I mean, if we just have list in there at the moment, it doesn't make sense. If you say for forward compatibility, then yeah. But the only other container I can see is set, and that's if it's not a list, if it's a set. So.
Yeah, I mean, we may have other container types in the future. I guess that's the other concern. Although I guess alt and bag and seek are getting removed from RDF, the next version of RDF. So that wouldn't be a strong argument for it. So yeah, Marcus,
yeah.
You're right. We only have list and set right now. Well, actually, no. There is another value, right? And that's singleton. It's that or unspecified. And you could say that it could also be a graph that the container's a graph, although I guess that's an object. But that would be another thing we could have in there.
Or a node.
Yeah, but that's
everything. Yeah, that's true. Object would be more reasonable, perhaps. Well, then you could have a mailing list in the thread if there were any other kinds of containers. And while it was voted down and I don't expect it to come back again anytime soon, I had imagined special objects which are maps, and the two maps I can think of are language map or lang map and IRI map. Those are possible advanced containers for some other future.
Right. I guess if we don't make this change, then we paint ourselves into a corner, meaning that if we wanted to be able to specify a set, because by not specifying lists, that doesn't mean that the item's automatically a set, right? It could be that it's an object as well. So we can't just have at list true and support the three things that the value could be, which is a list, a set, or an object. So if we keep it with at list colon true, then we are not, then we are, I think we are painting ourselves into a corner, right? Whereas if we change it to at container, we may never add at set, but if we needed to, we'd have a mechanism to do so.
Yeah, I would really like to see set for 1.2.
Okay, and I think we're ambivalent about it, and Josh Mandel wants to see it as well.
So what would that mean if we have container and it's set to at list? Would that mean that it always has to be an array at that position, even if there is just one value?
Yeah. But I doesn't list true sort of imply that as well?
No, that's just, if there is an array, it's ordered.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're at the top of the hour. I'm leaning a bit towards I'm still leaning towards that container list, even though it doesn't seem to, even though you could divine what it is with at list colon true. So maybe we should take this back to the mailing list and discuss it a bit more on there before we make a decision on this. Okay. Anything else that we should be aware of before next week's call? Anything that we should keep in mind? Thanks to everyone for the call, and we'll chat next week.